Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Child Protection in Sport Unit. We're part of the NSPCC and funded by UK Sports Councils. Our work supports organisations to safeguard all children taking part in sport.
Hello and welcome to the CPSU Voice of the Child podcast. And we've got a focus today on the RFL Listening Clubs initiative. I'm Lisa Ware, I'm one of the senior consultants from the CPSU, and I'm joined by Colette Eden, who's the former lead officer for RFL. And Colette's going to talk to us in a short while. But first of all, I wanted to start talking about the benefits of listening to children and why it's important for us to ensure that children and young people have a voice within our club structures. One of the biggest things for me around listening to children and the benefits is what we want to create is a safe environment for children. We want to have that safer culture where young people can feel that they're valued and empowered and listened to by the adults that are in their club. And what we hope to achieve from that as well is that children are happier in their clubs, and that creates a greater retention for children and that they stay in our clubs for a lot longer. The big thing for me as well is about thinking about how we can engage better with our children to make sure that they do feel listened to, so that when they do have any concerns that they will feel confident enough to come forward to the people and the adults in the clubs and tell us about concerns that are affecting them. Another important issue for involving young people is about that young people bring new ideas and can be creative around how sessions and sports coaching can be delivered. And last but not least, it's about the future of the club. Those children are the future of our clubs. And if we retain those children for longer, hopefully they will go on to be our future coaches, our future officials and volunteers within our club structures. And just thinking about kind of lots of different types of models and theories around listening to children and young people. So if people are not familiar with that, there's something looking at like the ladder of participation. And for me, kind of using that working with children and young people throughout my time as being a social worker, but also delivering direct delivery of group work sessions with young people, the bottom three aspects of the ladder of participation are non-participative. So it's not inclusive, it's not engaging, it's not involving young people. So the tokenistic, the decoration, and it's manipulative. But anything above the fourth rung upwards is all around involving children and young people. And that's essential for our club development and our organisations. And what we need to do is we need to have our senior managers on board with this with listening to children and young people, so that they can allocate resources and make sure that there's enough facilities out there, enough kind of commitment from the organisation to push that forward and drive it from the top down. And if we're thinking about from a legislative perspective, working together talks to us around developing that culture where we're engaging with children and young people and listening to their voices throughout any services that we're giving to young people. There's other models out there. So there's Kirkby, which looks at kind of the culture, the structure, the practice and the review of listening to children and young people. And for me, kind of thinking about some of the practice issues that we can do, some simple things like surveys, like having young people on committees, having young ambassadors, young officials, and listening to Colette in a short while, talking about listening clubs and how that can help and support our young people. So just wanted to introduce Colette Eden, who I said is the former lead officer for Rugby Football League. Hi, Colette, how are you doing?
Hi, Lisa. I'm great.
Just wanted to talk to you today around Rugby League's Listening Club initiative. And if maybe you can talk to us about the aims and objectives of the Listening Club initiative.
Yeah, that's great. What we did know about children and young people is that clubs are run by adults. Adults make the decisions, and there wasn't much representation from children and young people. Occasionally, for a specific thing, a club might ask children a question, but the voice of the child really isn't there in the club structure. It's run by adults and committees generally older people, and they're making decisions on children and young people. So what we know we don't know is what children and young people like from what they tell us. We don't listen to what they like. We don't really know if they know who to talk to if they've got a concern or a problem. We don't know really whether they feel safe enough to come forward with a concern or problem. And we don't know if they really know what to expect from coaches, what's appropriate behaviour, what's inappropriate behaviour. Mm-hmm. And every club is very different. Their environment is very different. It might be a club with 4 volunteers and 40 children, or it might be a massive club with 100 volunteers, 30 teams, lovely top-of-the-range equipment, to places that's just more like a shed that leaks into the changing room. All these environments are different, and they'll all have an effect on the children who are using them and their experiences. Some may feel quite happy in a really big environment, others mightn't. They might, like the smaller club, might feel it's too small, there's not enough people to talk to. So the idea of the listening club was to speak to children in that specific environment to see how they feel, what they want, and whether they're happy, and whether they generally feel safe. Of course, we don't know that anyone's safe, but how they feel is so important. If they don't feel safe, then they're going nowhere. They're not going to have fun. They're not going to achieve and enjoy themselves. So we kind of knew what we knew. And at our annual Club Welfare Officer Conference, I did a presentation and saying this, and everyone was agreeing, yeah, we run the club. And at the time I said, you know, I'm 58 years of age. I don't know what children and young people like. I shouldn't be making decisions on them. Mm. And most people kind of agree, well, yeah, actually, you know, perhaps I shouldn't. So the primary aim was to say, right, well, let's give the voice back to children, let them tell us what they want, what they like, what they don't like, so they could share their ideas, any concerns, any worries, and to contribute to their environment and to feel part of the club and its development. And as you said earlier, these children are the future of the club. They'll be the chair, they'll be the secretary, or they will be if they feel part of it and feel that they've been listened to. You need that commitment from them as much as you give them a commitment as well. So there was buy-in from the CWOs. They felt he could introduce it into the club environment, and they felt they could allay any negativity that they might experience. You know, there's always that worry. A coach doesn't want their players in a room talking about their coaching. You know, that fear of, I'm not a very good coach and everyone's going to find out. But they could explain that if you want children and young people to stay in the sport and not leave, then if we listen to what they want and we meet those needs, then they're more likely to stay and they're more likely to later on become volunteers. And even if they don't become volunteers, they may end up with a lovely job where they're going to sponsor a team or whatever. We want that involvement. So people left the conference feeling motivated to do it and to challenge any of the ideas of, well, we've always done it like this and we don't need anyone telling us what to do. Kids have always been happy, but they could really sell it to the negative people with, if we want them to stay, we've been losing some people. We tend to lose them age 15. Maybe we won't if we meet the needs of a 15-year-old, because we met the needs perhaps up to 12 or 13. Now the needs are different. We don't know what they are. So I had intended that CWOs would devise their own questions. I just thought, right, it's their club, their environment. They know issues of, say, perhaps, I don't know, a train goes past every half hour, or they've got a really muddy pitch. They could direct questions around this. But to be honest, they didn't feel confident with that. They wanted to know what they should ask. There was the obvious ones of, do you know who to go to if you've got any worries? Yeah. Mm. But they wanted the questions. So that was fine. And I devised a template, which was the questions they should ask, which was, what do you like about the club? What could we do better? So there was never a negative question, because, you know, committees wouldn't buy into that at all. They'd be, no, we don't want to know what they don't like about the club. It's just things we could do better. Yeah. What do you like about training? What could we do better? Same with match day. And if you've got a concern, who do you speak to? And it was the opportunity for the club welfare officer to say to the group, well, you should really speak to your mum or dad first of all. And then they could speak to the coach. But if for some reason they can't speak to the coach, perhaps speak to the club welfare officer. And then eventually, if that doesn't work, you can speak to the RFL, you can speak to the safeguarding manager. So the whole idea was trying to get children to speak to the parents, first of all. And it wasn't bypassing anyone, so it shouldn't upset anybody within clubs. So from that, clubs, the CWOs, for the next session would devise the questions based on their first one. So they need to do three over the year, beginning of the season, where you can tell them their expectations, what we expect from you as a player, and what you can expect from us. And the middle one, about August, would be about how's it going, any concerns, and then one at the end of the season to reflect on the season. So the second one should take on ideas from the first meeting, because I really wanted it that young people directed the agenda. Not, here are 10 questions to ask every 3 months. They're slightly different to the one before. Well, you might really be missing something that children, young people have said to you in the first one. And so you've got a second meeting and they're thinking, why aren't you talking about this? Because that was a really big issue and you're not even mentioning it now.
Yeah.
So that's was important that clubs took on the second one and really made their own questions. So they had guidelines to tell them what to do and to explain to the children and young people after the session that you'd give feedback to the committee. So if they said, we're sick of sausage and chips every week and we also want a 3G pitch. So at the end of the session, you say, right, OK, these are the things I'll take to the committee. The committee meeting's in 2 weeks' time. The week after, I'll get back to you. So it's important that they get the feedback quickly so they know that you've taken the ideas forward or any concerns and come back and say, this is what the committee said. One lovely little group of 7-year-olds wanted pictures of their local Super League team so they could look at Aspire to be whoever. One group said they wanted a roof on the changing room. They're so cheeky children, you know. They wanted a roof because of the big gaps in it. And others wanted Xboxes in the corner that they could play with. So there was all different things, and some clubs could accommodate more things than others. But the idea is you go back to them and say, as quickly as possible, we can do this, but we can't do this, and this is why we can't do it. But hopefully in the future we'll be able to. The important thing was to get the information back to these children and young people quickly, so that they feel that the thoughts and feelings and opinions are valued. By doing that, they're more likely to contribute more the following time, because you actually listened. So maybe I'll tell you some more ideas next time, because you are actually bothered, you're doing something. The whole idea is we wanted it, so say I'm the CWO, I'm Colette, and I stand there and say, right, we're having fish fingers and chips, and your idea about painting our club colours on the side of the building, everybody loves that. We're going to do it in the next couple of weeks when it's not raining. We're doing that. That's a fantastic idea. And the aim of that would be, if a child has a worry or a concern, we'll go, do you know what? I'll tell Colette, because I know that she listens and she does something. If you tell her something, so I feel I can trust her, because she definitely listened last time. So that was the primary reason, really. So a listening club should mean a safer club, because children should feel like their views and opinions and concerns matter, that there's somebody there to listen to. Not a picture on a wall that says, this is Colette, if you've got a problem. It's this is Colette who we talk to often, and we have our sessions, so a note taught to her, or I can say to me, mum, that's Colette, that's the lady who was talking to us, should we talk to her, because I'm a bit worried. Any club that did this were presented with a listening club certificate that they could display in their clubhouse and a copy of it on the website or whatever. And the idea is to start it off as a positive thing. So promote it as a positive. Oh, we are a listening club. But then, and it being best practice, to it then becoming eventually poor practice not to have it.
Yeah, that sounds like a good incentive for other clubs then, isn't it? In terms of that kind of like, Thatto Heath Club in St. Helens has got it, but then Rain Hill Club in St. Helens haven't got it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And the idea is parents will go to another club and see it and go back to their club and say, why aren't you doing that in our club? Why is the listening club? Yeah. How do you stand there and tell parents, oh, we don't want to be a listening club? Well, we've just been to the club down the road and they are. Why don't you want to do it? Eventually it become you are the poor club for not doing it. We go well past the, oh, well done, you're doing this. It's why aren't you? And it is going to be part of the RFL's equivalent to club mark going forward. So if you want the kite mark, then you'll have to be a listening club and show evidence.
That's brilliant that you're linking it in with the Club Matters structure.
Yeah.
But what other ways did you motivate clubs to get on board? So I think that there was some stuff that you did with maybe some of the Super League clubs.
Yeah, that was really important. Because when a Super League club does something and you have presentations on pitch or they put it in the programme, the community clubs listen. Saints were the first to do it and Wigan have done it now. Then the community clubs are, well, I'll do it as well because Saints are doing it. Saints have offered and other clubs will do the same that to present the certificates on the pitch. Mm. So if you're there in St. Helens and Blackbrook gets us the listening certificate, then Hayes Finch, they're thinking, oh, they just got that. I want our club there. So that was one way. And also in the newsletter, it got people to do a write-up of how they found it. At the following conference, I got some people to stand up and to talk and say, this is what we found hard. And for me, the best one was someone who stood up. They said, Colette's at it again, and we've got to do it. Ooh, this is going to be hard work. And then admitted that the morning after doing the session, she rang me up and said, that was absolutely fantastic. She said, we really feel rewarded for all the hard work we do because we praise the coaches, praise everybody. We love our game. And they had some good ideas of changes they wanted. And one of them, and I think that this is so lovely, and if you think about it, you go, yeah, of course. In a lot of community clubs, it's like a bar area. So after a game, you end up sitting with the mum and dad on a little round table and eating the food. What they wanted was to sit together and eat together, which we all do. That's what you miss in lockdown, going eating with friends, because it's a lovely social thing. And for me, you might be a great player, but you like the company, you go for exercise or just to meet your mates. And if you're thinking, oh, that's a great, you know, I don't think I'll bother playing on Sunday. But you don't want to miss the banter afterwards. So this club went out and bought a table from Costco, the big £30 table. And all these blood-year-olds after the game sat together and ate. And they probably never mentioned rugby once. So they played the game, they were eating. And that social aspect is so important. And they had the opportunity to do that.
And yeah, listening and to the children, because that's what the children wanted. So the new ideas came from them.
Yeah. And when you think about it, it makes sense. And as I say, if you're not a great player, you think, I don't want to miss the banter afterwards. So it's encouraging them to go. So they mightn't be the best player, but they might be the funniest person in that group and be valuable in that group for other reasons. So she stood up and she explained all about that and said, you know, we learned so much and we're looking forward to talking to them again. But from that, and because of the positives of her listening, was two of them, a male and a female, were doing it. They were listening out all the time and listening to what the children and young people were talking about, regularly asking them questions. And the children and young people would go and say, do you know what I was thinking? And giving their ideas forward, because they developed this really nice culture of listening to children and children feeling, I'm going to tell you because you really do care. You want to know what I'm thinking. And you know that ultimately is what we want. And then we've got that safer bit where they'll tell us if something's wrong.
Yeah. And Colette, for me, there was a few things you said there that were really important. You know, young people come up with some new ideas that maybe the adults hadn't thought about in terms of the social side of rugby league. And it meant that they were, maybe the team were able to bond together more because of those social aspects that were outside of the actual physical activity, where young people are maybe developing more social skills, which is fabulous. But also kind of coming together as a stronger team, which maybe meant that on the pitch, they ended up kind of getting better results because they felt it like a cohesive group as well. So that was really positive to hear that just from having that initial listening club initiative session with young people, that there was a really positive outcome for those young people. And hopefully that means that now this group's a tight group and they'll stay together longer and retain those players for such a long period of time. As you've said, we might not get that drop off when they get to 13, 14, 15 years of age.
And I think also, if you can create that bond, as you say, isn't all about on the pitch, because if perhaps if you're a weaker player or feel you're a weaker player, you mightn't have that bond the same, but that social bit will do that. And so if you're not there 1 week, you know, your mates will say, where were you? Yeah, you're coming to training, aren't you, on Tuesday? And keep them on side and keep them there.
Brilliant. So just in terms of the facilitation of the listening clubs initiative, how does that operate?
Well, the clubs actually identify when they will do their sessions and how best to do it. I mean, some people have their own clubhouses, others don't. They use other facilities. So each one's a bit different. But ideally, a CWO would organise into appropriate age groups, because I did one once, I think 6 to 8s and then 9s to 13s and then over 13s, because the language used by the young people is very different. When I said, I'm a club welfare officer, what do you think I do? Well, 15-year-olds were very graphic in what they thought I was keeping out of the game, where the 6-year-olds were saying, your job is to pick up the poo off the pitch. I mean, yeah, that's, that about sums me up. He said, oh, and the stones as well. So for a little one, the role of CWO will be the basic care, the mumminess. But as you get older, you also know the bad things that can happen in sport, and they tell you. So it's really important you don't mix ages where the language will be so different, you know, because you don't want to be talking to 6-year-olds about, you know, keeping certain people away. You just want to encourage them to speak. So they do it in particular age groups and use things like flip chart paper, depending on the age, like letting them go up and add their own things. And I always encourage that everybody got a post-it note, and at the end to write on it, everybody had to write something on the post-it note and hand it in. So it might have been, I am happy and I am okay. Or if you wasn't, you'd put Billy Jones, not okay. And you just, everyone hand it in, and then that CWO knows that Billy Jones isn't happy but didn't want to say anything in that session. Well, everybody writes, so it's not like, what are you writing? Everybody has to do it. And I did that with the Wigan Academy, lads of 18 and 19. And just said, right, I want everybody to write that, you know, I'm happy. Or if not, put your name and your phone number. And nobody did. So I went away thinking, well, perhaps they are okay then. They had an opportunity. Or if they weren't, they could have still gone and spoke to someone else. But you're given that opportunity then in case they've thought of anything. So to make sure certain things are in place, some safeguards, and that the CWO wasn't on their own in the room, and there's somebody who could take notes so it didn't look too biased as well, or you could dismiss something that the note takers picked up and you go, oh, that was actually a very important point. So explaining how excellent materials you could use to encourage people to talk, or if there's always somebody who's very, very loud, other people's views are also heard because they're writing down the second post-it note onto flip chart paper or whatever. So you get everyone's ideas. Now, some clubs were well able to do this and some needed help. And as the lead officer, I was there to help them in whatever way, to talk them through it, or went out and did some with a few people who felt they weren't able, but they were quite happy afterwards to go, oh yeah, next time I could do this. I just made it such a big thing in my head. Or, but I really do think that having feedback at the conference from people who've done it and in newsletters of people saying, I did this and this is what we found. Or I would present the findings from a club and say, these are the key findings. So it gave other clubs ideas and thinking, oh, actually, I want to know that about our club as well.
You just touched on a thing there about kind of planning. And for me, that's really essential when you're working with young people and you're doing what I would call participation activities. So that involvement, that empowerment side of things. And I think you're absolutely right, Colette. I think it needs to be in there. So things like not forgetting our basic safeguarding stuff around having two members of staff, getting consent from parents as well. So parents know and buying into the sessions that you're doing. And listening to what you were saying about, I suppose, meeting those basic needs of the children, so making sure that everybody has the opportunity to have a say within that session and kind of giving everybody the same opportunity to be able to express their views. And I think it's important for clubs to think about the methodology that they use about that, so post-it notes, flip charts are really a good way to be able to do that. So Colette, just thinking about different methodologies that maybe people might have used in the listening clubs initiative, is there anything that you can think of that jumps to mind?
Some clubs did it as the whole session as a large group, were then developed, realising it's better perhaps to have smaller groups, have different personalities, because they know the children, so put quieter ones together or not together, depending on what they thought and who could encourage who. Obviously, you've got a mixture of ages and abilities, so not all children are great at writing. You don't want to make them feel uncomfortable or they can't spell. So some of it was shout out some words about the club and then say, right, are we happy with all these words? No, good isn't good enough. The best it should be, not a good club, the best club. Right, okay, we'll put a circle around all our favourite words and let's write these words down and see if we can make a picture of our club, of what words we like, what we wouldn't want our club to be like. So it might be, and your team, it might be you don't want your team to be arguing and falling out. You want your team to be passionate and a team. So giving words and grouping them together and then making a picture of this is our club. One of the things that a lot of clubs did was, what does our club badge mean to us? And I did this with Wigan because I knew the Saints had done it. And that was the very first question I'd asked them. And they were like, it means, well, it's my club. Because these are 18, 19-year-olds. Like, I'm not telling you. And then at the end, I said, right, should we go back to that first one? Because I tell you what, I wouldn't want to play for Wigan. I want to play for Saints. Should have heard all the things I said about their club. Well, so you were just saying, oh, that's a nice club. Then you're like, it's passion. It's this. It's this. And you were really into it by then. So I think as well, you go back on your first question or two and not start off, especially not start off with, do you know who to speak to if you've got a problem? Yeah, you want to throw that in somewhere further in when they go, well, it's you, Colette. Yeah, or I don't know. So, you know, you want to start them off with something like, what does your club badge mean to you? And then when you go back later on, or you can go back on a really important question and say, right, we said this. Is there anything more we want to say? And you find that they will add more. So it's not kind of, right, I've got 10 questions. We'll do this, this way, that one, that way. We've done our 10 questions, that's it. It's given them the opportunity to reflect because they've got to the end of it. They're more confident, more comfortable with you, because otherwise your first question might always be the poorest one.
Absolutely. Colette, you've talked about it being, you know, you went and spoke to children as young as 8 up to 19 years of age, which is fabulous. Yeah. I'm sure that must have thrown up some safeguarding concerns. And just thinking about what support did the safeguarding team at RFL give to the clubs who were doing the Listening Clubs initiative?
The important thing we said was, you don't know what will come out of this, or you might look at a child and think, you looked uncomfortable there. And what I always said is, if you think, should I speak to someone about this? Then the answer is always yes. There's any doubt in your mind, just run it by me as a lead officer. I'd be more than happy to say, right, okay, what should we do now with this? But to have that, and you do kind of need to have a knowledge of those children, because children's lives are all so different, aren't they? And you could take absolute shock at something that's been said. But if you spoke to the coach and said, right, have you got any concerns with little Johnny? Well, no, not really. I'm a bit worried about the language he's using. It's his brother who's in the under-14s. Has got a foul mouth and says some disgusting things. And I think he just repeats half of it. And then that might be slightly different to some, you know, you might view it differently and approach it differently to you thinking, here's an eight-year-old kid who's just said something really, really inappropriate, you know, where you think there's immediate danger. What's this child saying? Now you know he's got a brother in the under-14s who's saying inappropriate things to him. So talking to club welfare officers to get that information and do something with it, not go, no, what are kids like today? You need to follow it through and to see if there's any concerns from that. You may need to speak to the parents. And if you've got any questions, then you would contact the lead officer to say, I came across this and this is what I intend to do, or I haven't got a clue what to do with it. So that awareness, and sometimes you might just find, and a club welfare officer might be in a better position to see, perhaps a child's a bit withdrawn from the group, or you suspect there may be a bit of bullying going on that the coach may not have noticed. You know, it's your job to be looking at these groups as an independent person, not as a coach, as someone who's there for their welfare, and to try and identify any concerns or anything where you could say to the coach, do you know, I thought little Johnny has a really miserable face, but you know, when he smiles, it's lovely. He's got a lovely smile, but he doesn't smile very often, you know, and to identify these things. And the coach might think little Johnny is a miserable thing, but he's never done anything to make little Johnny smile.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me about the Listening Clubs initiative is how RFL have the senior management have got on board with it.
Yes,
so it's not just being about grassroots, it's about the senior managers who have clearly bought into it and are promoting it. Is there anything that you kind of wanted to tell our listeners around that process and why the senior managers were quite passionate about the Listening Clubs initiative?
Yeah, it makes a better environment for everyone in the game. So you could look at it cynically and say professional clubs like it because if you create a really good environment for them when they're younger, they're going to stay there and more chance of getting good professionals coming along. The RFL's view, obviously, is we want the game to grow. We want more people to play it. And the happier children are, then the more likely they are to stay and to tell their friends. So if you say, I love rugby, why don't you come train with me on a Tuesday night? Somebody might, because you keep on going on about what a great time you're having, and that will help the game to grow. It'll be played in a better, safer environment, safe in all aspects, basic health and safety to welfare and safeguarding. And the RFL, we think of it like a family, and it fits into to the values of the RFL. We are a family, and that's how we operate. And also, it's getting that culture of listening, and all consultations now taking place with any younger person is about listening to young people. So it might have been, right, well, let's find out what they think about us changing this rule. Go and ask the players what they think. It isn't, it's about listening to children and young people. And that's how it's worded, and that's how it's coming into the culture of the RFL. It's about listening to children because that is the future of the game, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks very much for that, Colette. And I know that you've kindly given us the resource that you used or as a template to the welfare officers for the Listening Clubs initiatives, and that's going to go alongside the podcast.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So just to kind of, for us kind of thinking about it, you know, we've talked a lot about how RFL have used the Listening Clubs initiative to promote the welfare and the rights and the views of children and young people at a grassroots level. But one of the things for me is I think that this could be replicated in lots of other sports as well. So I don't necessarily think it's something that is just for RFL, for Rugby Football League. And if I think about other sports who have got really strong young people's voices and participation, representation within their organisation, as other sports like swimming have got a youth board who are really active and they listen to their views. And I know that that's also something that Rugby Football League have been doing, is having a young people's board as well. And I think that that's a really fabulous initiative, and hopefully those young people will influence at a more strategic level. So is there anything that you wanted to say around that kind of the young people's board from RFL?
Yeah, it's great. It's still fairly new. The group is made up of really fantastic young people who have a real interest, either having played rugby league or as a spectator. I presented safeguarding to them and they were all so keen. And I said, love you to look at the resources we have for young people to see what you think. They wanted to do that. And my aim would be that, because these were university students really, my aim would be that they would create and run a youth board of under 18s. They would facilitate that rather than it being the RFL, which runs a youth board, could have a youth group run by the youth board. So it would be young people engaging with younger people and getting their ideas. And so you could give them an idea and ask them to work with it and to run with it. When I did a session with young match officials, and it was the idea of whether they'd like a shirt in a different colour to identify them as being a child. So if you verbally abused a match official, if they wore a particular colour, taking the idea from football, that you're also abusing a child and you'd know that. Well, they were so against it. There wasn't one young match official who wanted that. But some said they wouldn't have minded some armbands. Now, if you asked, why do you think a young match official leaves? A lot would say, because they don't like the abuse. But when I spoke to them, what they really, really didn't like was filling in the match report forms. Some of them found it really difficult. Well, if you're 12 and 13, filling in this form can be really difficult, really aim more at adults. So we could lose young match officials and go, well, what do you expect with, you know, they might have been abused. But it might be that they hate the form filling and they need help with that. And I suggested that they had sessions with the young match officials to show them how to fill in the forms and to give them templates. So you do these sessions and you find out so much more, because you think you're going in with information. Oh, well, I know this. I know how horrible it is being a young match official. Well, actually, no, don't know that much about it. Mm. And so I think anything where youth board worked with a younger youth group from all parts of the sport, from match officials, from male players, female players, disabled players, and to be truly representative of the game, then that would really be great. They really would be taking control and having a big influence in their sport. I think most sports could do this, and certainly any team sport rather than an individualistic sport.
I went to talk to some club welfare officers at RFL about their Listening Clubs initiative and how they put that into practice in their clubs and the benefits they found as a result. Here's what they had to say.
I'm just with Rachel Fox-Kent from Langworthy Reds over in Salford, and it's a rugby league club. And just wanted to ask you, Rachel, about the Listening Clubs initiatives that rugby league run. Can you tell me what type of things you did when you did your Listening Club session?
Yep, so the Listening Club sessions were all about listening to the players at our club and finding out what their views were on the club. So we held informal chats with every age group, from the 7-year-olds at the time up to the 15-year-olds. And we generally asked them what they enjoyed about the club, why they came to the club. And then we asked them if there's anything that they didn't enjoy or if they had any suggestions on how we can improve the club in the future.
And did the kids come up with anything that you thought that was either surprising or that you thought we can make a real big difference here?
They came up with the usual sort of things that children do. So they wanted a swimming pool and we had to explain why that wasn't really the most practical of reasons. And then, interestingly enough, they came up with they wanted better behaviour for playing and they wanted to help them teams concentrate. And they wanted certain coaches to put in maybe like a couple of minutes time out as part of the behaviour management for team if someone was messing around, because they weren't happy with their teammates messing around.
And did you see an improvement in the behaviour then out of the children
once
now?
Once we said, this is what you wanted, so this is what we put in, because as coaches we don't want to stop any child from playing. But if they've told us that their concentration is affected by other children's choices and they want to stop it, that showed us that they want to play, and
that's
they
brilliant.
Want to improve. One of the major things they wanted after in rugby league, after you play the game, the home team and the opposition get together and they share some food. It's a pie or a hot dog, and I was really wanted a drink at the same time, and it was something that as grown-ups we'd not thought about. We'd just gone, right, we've played the game, let's go and have a hot dog and have a chat. So once we started providing juice for them, they stuck around a little bit longer, they played a little bit longer, they interacted with other teams in the club a little bit longer.
So it's kind of building up that more sense of, stronger sense of team and community.
It built up the relationships between coaches and players, as well as the parents, because the parents all stay with them as well.
Oh, that's really nice. And has there been any other knock-on effects apart from that you can think of for the listening clubs?
Probably just as club, as the child welfare officer in the club, my profile was raised a little bit, because as much as they knew me as a coach, they didn't know also that I was that link if they needed some help or they needed some extra support within the club.
So now everybody in the club knows who the club welfare officer is,
and they know who to go to. It's raised the profile of that role. It's also, we're quite a mental health positive club, and it's raised them conversations as well, because they're now, you know, they happen. People are looking out for each other and they're checking.
That's brilliant.
On the well-being of us.
So just listening to children about what food they wanted actually is now making sure that children's safety and welfare is looked after more in the club.
Looked into as well.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Is there anything that you think the children have got out of this as well?
I think they can. There's more of a, from their point of view now, is because their views are valued more, because they can see it, they've asked us for something and we've put it in place.
Brilliant. That's fabulous. Thanks very much for that, Rachel. Hi, it's Lisa, and I'm just with Beth Hughes from Ashton Bears in Wigan.
Yeah, that's right.
And just wanted to ask you, Beth, about the Rugby League Listening Clubs initiative. I've heard so much about it, so just can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Well, basically, we were asked to complete this by the RFL to basically ask our children what their views of how their club was run, how they felt, things were going for them, what we could do better to improve, how they enjoyed the game or didn't enjoy the game, what their experience of game day was, training, about their volunteers in their club, did they know who they are, did they feel safe? Lots and lots of questions we asked them.
So what do you think the benefits for the club was for doing the listening club sessions?
Well, obviously we're run by a committee of adults, so we think we have our priorities and our now. We think we, you know, portray ourselves to our public and our community, because we're a community club. But it was really interesting to see the things that worried us as a committee weren't on the children's radar. It was really interesting to see the little things that actually really bothered them and their experience of the game, because even though we try to protect them as much as we can, things still slip through, you know. So it was really good to see their perspective on things.
So what was on the kids' radars?
Well, fortunately enough, 100% of our kids knew who everyone was in our club, and they all said they felt safe. But it was still really sad to see that 12% of them thought that parents, and still heard parents on the touch lines, being aggressive and being verbally abusive towards other players and things like that. And they all, that made them feel really sad. So even though it was a small number, it was still, we were still quite shocked that we were still having that experience. So we did a lot of work with our coaches and our touchline managers on, you know, on addressing appropriate touchline behaviour. And we did a recent listening club, and none of them reported that they still were hearing that. So that was really good.
So that's brilliant. So the kids are raising things, and then you've responded to it and put proper measures in place. And now they've seen that positive change. So how do you think the kids now feel about listening clubs, knowing that you've listened to them and things have actually changed for the better for them?
I think it's brought them into the club more. That they think they've actually got a voice. Where it's not just the adults running it on behalf of the kids, it's the kids that have actually got a say in how the club is run for them and with them. So it's not done to them, it's done on behalf of them, with their thoughts and their, what they want at the forefront of everything we do.
Brilliant, that's fantastic. And when you do the listening club sessions, what type of things do you do to facilitate listening to them?
Well, we always do it on dependent of age group. So it might be something really fun and engaging for the younger kids, where we're just playing games and we're asking questions with the coaches and other volunteers. Or it might be we've used iPads, you know, SurveyMonkeys. We've asked, you know, we've used different tools for different age groups. But playing games with the younger ones has been the most best way to do it, because then they're not feeling like they're being interviewed and things like that. So just game techniques was really good.
Brilliant. That's great. Thanks very much for that. I'm just with Billy Vaughan of Portico Vine Rugby League Club in St. Helens, yeah?
It is.
Yeah. And Billy, we've just been talking to some of the other club welfare officers around the Listening Clubs initiative. And I know that you've got something really special around listening to children from your club, around something that really sad that happened in your club. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that?
I can. Sadly, it was a bereavement of Kurt Latimer. Kurt was the under-16s coach. And sadly, we just had a phone call that Kurt had passed away. Mm. This affected everybody in the club, mainly the children, because as adults, we could understand what had happened and maybe why it had happened. But for children, they couldn't in any way understand what had happened. Mm. So it was our job to actually get them through that process.
Yeah.
Being a child welfare officer, it's not just about telling everybody. It's about listening. Mm-hmm. It's about asking what children wanted to do, why they wanted to do that, what they would get out of it, and then enacting what they wanted to do. Mm. And they wanted to create a memory wall with pictures of all of them, the boys, Kurt, from all various ages. Now, we've got that for posterity.
Yeah.
They wanted to create a memory garden in honour of Kurt, and they've done that.
That's lovely.
They planted the plants, the bulbs, they recreated something that they had a vision of. They drew it on paper and then enacted their thoughts into reality.
Yeah.
And that's it for posterity. Brilliant. We've created a legacy of Kurt, but the children have done that, not us.
Yeah.
That's through listening to what they wanted.
That's fabulous. Billy, what do you think children and young people in your club get out of the Listening Clubs initiative?
I think once you enact the role of a listening club, you then got to fulfil that. By going on the course, by being educated yourself to becoming a listening club, you in turn then have the capability to enact the role by listening to children. It is quite simplistic. Mm. I think it's easy in life to talk, but it's better to listen. Mm. And I don't think everybody's aware of that.
Mm.
But since we did, I think it was Colette herself, Colette Eden, who took us on that course. And then when I came home, I had a greater confidence.
Mm.
I had a greater confidence to be able to speak to children and ask them what they wanted.
Mm.
And then in turn, listen to what they wanted, include them in the role of enacting whatever they want.
Yeah.
So it then became a complete issue rather than doing it singly. The kids in turn were involved. They felt partners of it. They felt ownership of it. And without the listening process, I don't think we as a club would be where we are today.
Mm.
So we're grateful of that.
So in terms of the benefits for the club then, one of the things for you is that the club's still surviving because I've just heard you saying it's a small club in a bigger catchment area with some other bigger clubs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So has there been any other benefits for you as a club?
I think with our catchment,
we've
got children and parents coming to our club simply because they've heard via word of mouth that we are a listening club, that we are a club who has total engagement with parents and children and allow them to have their voice.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things with the listening club was we have co-opted young children onto our committee.
Mm.
So they are the voice of the children on the committee. And at first, some of the older members of the club, some of the stalwarts of the club, thought that it was not a good idea.
Yeah.
Now the children have come out with some really quite revolutionary ideas. They're beginning to admire them for what they really are.
Oh, that's
and you
lovely.
Know, we've actually created a history at our club.
Mm.
But if we want our legacy to go on,
these
children will carry the legacy.
Absolutely.
We have to say that, don't we?
That's brilliant. How did you convince the committee members to allow some children to sit on the board?
Well, what we did was I decided that for each captain of each age group, we would put a picture up around the club of them. So everybody knew who they were and what their role was. Then I thought we'd expand upon that role by them becoming the figurehead and the voice and the ears of each team.
Mm.
So they would feed that back to us then we would take it to the committee. Then we thought, why don't we bring them into the committee?
Yeah.
Why don't we let them see what we do that they know nothing about? In turn, they will hopefully duly respect what our roles are, but equally have a say in the future. So it's been quite successful. The lads didn't want to do it, and the girls didn't want to do it at first. They were a little bit nervous. But now it's quite funny. Pops, what time's the next meeting? Sunday, 12 noon. Good man, I'll be there.
Brilliant.
Isn't it good?
Yeah, so pure partnership within the club between adults and children.
Got to have equality.
Fabulous.
Equality in life's everything.
Brilliant. That's a great quote for us to finish on. Thanks very much, Billy.
Thank you.
That's what club welfare officers thought. If you want to listen to children and keep their views at the heart of everything that goes on in their club, here's some additional resources. On the CPSU website, we've got the Involved tool as well, which is a short online training course for aimed at clublands, at grassroots, around listening to children and young people and getting them involved in decision-making processes, like Colette already identified as part of the Listening Clubs initiatives. And if people wanted some ideas around how to facilitate that, maybe some different methodology, so it's not just about kind of having surveys, but making it more creative and fun. If people wanted to go on to the Children's Rights Wales, they've got a PDF document called Young Spice, and that would be a resource I used to use when I used to do group work with young people, that gives you kind of examples in terms of like carousels, dot voting, cotton bud debates and stuff like that. So there's loads of really good handy hints that people can use for different methodologies of involving young people. Golf has got a really active young people's board. Them, along with swimming and I think it's cycling as well, were part of Sport Recreational Alliance or young board members report that was done. So that if people haven't seen it, I would definitely recommend reading that report, and it kind of gives people an indication into what they can do for helping young people get on board and have a young people's board. But also from a perspective in terms of safeguarding young people and that worrying concerns when young people have got concerns and they want to talk to people around something that's bothering them, there is the NSPCC Learning website, and there's some handy videos on there where people can watch and get some ideas about how to listen to children and young people if they've got a concern. But there's also, if you're the lead officer of a national governing body listening to this, we previously sent out information around Opening Doors webinar, which Anne Stewart kindly worked with us on, and that's a really excellent webinar which helps people to listen to children, like Colette was saying before. So if young people are maybe presenting as being really quiet and shy when they're not normally, what are the cues that young people are giving to us? Because quite often children don't make a disclosure as such. They might tell us through their body language, through their behaviours, through their emotions, that something's not right, and it's about how we prompt those conversations with children and young people. So Colette, I didn't know whether there was anything else that you wanted to add to the podcast, or whether you felt that you'd answered everything and being able to tell us everything about the Listening Clubs initiative.
I just thought of something which has got nothing at all to do with this one. I was listening to the Karen Leach podcast, and she said it exactly right. It's about listening to hear. That is key, isn't it? We say we listen to children, but we've got to listen to hear. And certainly, from Karen's experiences, you know, you're hearing things that matter that you need to act upon.
And I think it's really lovely to finish on somebody who's got lived experiences of abuse within sport. Yeah. So listening to hear from Karen Leach, who's a ex-swimmer for Swim Ireland, and her experiences, so people can listen to that podcast as well. That's available on the CPSU website.
Yes, excellent.
I'd like to say thank you very much for joining us on this podcast, and we hope to speak to you again soon. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this Child Protection in Sport Unit podcast. If you're looking for more information and resources on safeguarding children in sport, please visit our website at thecpsu.org.uk.